Ray ignored the envelope until he stopped in Hattiesburg, 90 minutes north of the coast. He bought gas and a dreadful shrink-wrapped sandwich, then was off again in a hurry to get to Clanton, where Harry Rex knew the sheriff and all his deputies. Gordy had a particularly menacing sneer, one that had been captured by a police photographer in 1991. His brothers, Slat and Alvin, were certainly no prettier. Ray couldn't tell the oldest from the youngest, not that it mattered. None of the three resembled the others. Bad breeding. Same mother, no doubt different fathers. They could have a million each, he didn't care. Just leave me alone. Chapter 33. The hills began between Jackson and Memphis, and the coast seemed time zones away. He had often wondered at how a state so small could be so diverse. The Delta region along the river, with its wealth of cotton and rice farms, and the poverty that still astonished outsiders. The coast, with its blend of immigrants and laid-back New Orleans casualness. And the hills, where most counties were still dry and most folks still went to church on Sundays. A person from the hills would never understand the coast and never be accepted in the Delta. Ray was just happy he lived in Virginia. Patton French was a dream, he kept telling himself, a cartoonish character from another world, a pompous jerk being eaten alive by his own ego, a liar, a briber, a shameless crook. Then he would glance over at the passenger seat and see the sinister face of Gordy Priest. One glance, and there was no doubt this brute and his brothers would do anything for the money Ray was still hauling around the country. An hour from Clanton, and again within range of a tower, his cell phone rang. It was Fogg Newton, and he was quite agitated.
"Where the hell have you been?" he demanded.
"You wouldn't believe me.
I've been calling all morning."
"What is it, Fogg?"
"We've had a little excitement around here. Last night after General Aviation closed, somebody sneaked onto the ramp and put an incendiary device on the left wing of the Bonanza. Boom! A janitor in the main terminal just happened to see the blaze, and they got the fire truck out pretty fast."
Ray had pulled onto the shoulder of Interstate 55 and stopped. He grunted something into the phone and Fogg kept going.
"Severe damage, though. No doubt it was an act of arson. You there?"
"Just listening," Ray said. "How much damage?"
"Left wing, the engine, and most of the fuselage. Probably a total loss for insurance purposes. The arson investigator's already here. Insurance guy's here, too. If the tanks had been full, it would have been a bomb."
"The other owners know about it?"
"Yes, everyone's been out. Of course, they're first on the suspect list. Lucky you were out of town. When are you coming back?"
"Soon."
He made it to an exit and pulled into the gravel lot of a truck stop, where he sat in the heat for a long time and occasionally glanced down at Gordy. The Priest gang moved fast. Biloxi yesterday morning, Charlottesville last night. Where are they now? Inside, he drank coffee and listened to the chatter of the truckers. To change the subject, he called Alcorn Village to check on Forrest. He was in his room, sleeping the sleep of the righteous, as he described it. It was always amazing, he said, how much he slept in rehab. He'd complained about the food, and things had improved slightly. Either that, or he had developed a taste for pink jello. He asked how long he could stay, like a kid at Disney World. Ray said he wasn't sure. The money that had once seemed endless was now very much in jeopardy.
"Don't let me out, bro," he pleaded. "I want to stay in rehab for the remainder of my life."
The Atkins boys had finished the roof at Maple Run without incident. The place was deserted when Ray arrived. He called Harry Rex and checked in.
"Let's drink some beer on the porch tonight," Ray suggested.
Harry Rex had never said no to such an invitation.